We were looking forward to this as being part of our sort of evolving year in review coverage here. Gentleman that we've had once on the show previously and who certainly we're going to have back repeatedly over the course of time. We also have a print discussion, if you will, with him that's going to be part of our Dissecting the Decades ebook that is coming out probably about 2 weeks from today on the FDHLounge.com site. I speak, of course, of Simon Applebaum, and you can follow this guy's work in many different ways. Much like the FDH Lounge, he's all about multiple platforms on the internet here. The blog at jackmyers.com, where you can follow his media coverage, his weekly webcast, which is on Blog Talk Radio, and it is podcast at sunnybite.com. And again, a gentleman who we enjoy talking to and learning from, because he's talking to the people who are leaders in television and technology and really the cutting edge of entertainment and how it's being presented to people. It's always a pleasure to talk to Simon Applebaum and welcome him back to the FDH Lounge. Simon, good to have you back on tonight. How are you tonight, sir?
Very well, Rick. You're the first person in the world that's ever introduced me as a multi-platform kind of person. It sounds pretty good.
Oh, and it's great to be back. I enjoy being an innovator, Simon. Thank you for mentioning
me too.
That.
Me too. I'm getting it. You know, with all podcasts and internet radio and doing stuff on the web as opposed to print, you got to innovate in these times.
Yeah, exactly. And we identify with you very closely in that regard, because we try to do stuff too. You know, columns, shows such as this one. It's all about getting your content out in as many ways as possible. And you are constantly talking to people who disseminate their content in any number of ways. But in terms of conventional broadcasting, as we've come to define it over the decades, specifically television, we talked about this with you, I think, at about the time that it happened. We talked about it with you. Here's a good way of pimping our discussion with you in the ebook for people to check out. To me, the biggest story in television, or at least broadcast television this year, was everything with Jay Leno, the transition in late night, NBC finally facing that June 1st, 2009 deadline, and going with this massive gamble on their part that they hoped would positively change the future of television, thus far not looking to be the case, at least in their favor. Would you agree that's probably the biggest story of the year in television?
One of. It certainly has changed the landscape of broadcast television. It may have led in part to the Comcast NBC Universal deal announced last week. It certainly has put NBC more in the dumper than it was before. There's no question that there were a number of miscalculations. Miscalculation maybe number one on NBC's part was doing the show five nights a week. Second, not doing the show live, which might have helped get the audience. Third, I think everybody expected Jay to do something different. He didn't. He basically brought the Tonight Show to 10 p.m., and the audience is not buying it. They feel that doing a monologue where Jay is basically rehashing like past days, opposed to doing the news of the night. You wanted to talk to, if you wanted to see the Jay Leno show, you wanted, I think, Jay to do sort of that was the day that was, the take on the day, the way that Johnny Carson used to do on the Tonight Show. But he didn't do that. I also thought he got off on a bad start with the Kanye West interview when he had 18 million viewers that opening night, and he failed to ask the big question: why did you do what you did to Taylor Swift on the MTV Video Music Awards show? What made you do it in the first place? He was right to talk about what his mother would say, but it was sort of like the Hugh Grant question he asked O'Brienly on the Tonight Show years ago. He should have asked the same thing on his opening night. He didn't, and I think the audience turned him off. And I think there's been miscalculation after miscalculation, both by NBC and by the production team of the Jay Leno show, about what the audience would take. And everything has gone way off base. Ratings are a disaster. More importantly, the local news ratings for NBC stations have made an about-face. Stations that may have been number one in the time period, 11 p.m. Eastern, or late news, have gone to 2 to 3 at a time when local news advertising is very hard to come by.
And he's the ultimate politician. It's how he helped himself to get the Tonight Show in the first place, was by working the affiliates, going out there into the hinterlands and making it happen. And if those people are turning on him, then it's a very, very bad sign indeed. I will say, and this is not to put myself over for a prediction that may come true. But
and one other thing, Rick, just interrupt for a second.
Yeah.
He is a terrific person. He is a terrific talent. No question he's a hard worker. No question today is one of the best political satirists around. I think he's just been misused and maybe misguided in terms of the kind of show he should have done at 10 p.m. It should be a live show. It should be more unpredictable. Maybe Jay should have started one episode with, if Mariah Carey was on the show, have her start off with a performance rather than a monologue. And some of the new bits that have been made, like the green car challenge and 10 at 10, just don't come off.
Yeah, and well, clearly, these are signs, Freudian or otherwise, that he never wanted to leave the Tonight Show. He's brought a lot of the accoutrements with him, and only small changes, like you said, additions like the green car challenge. But my prediction at the time of the handover, I said a year, year and a half from now, you may see a reversion to the status quo ante. These affiliates get PO'd enough with the way that things are going there. If Conan is struggling to compete at 11:30, we could see this Leno and Letterman dynamic once again. I mean, do you give any credence to that at this point, Simon? It would seem to kill two birds with one stone if things continue to go down this path.
Well, it's headed that way because Conan's ratings are down, Jimmy Fallon's ratings are down, and late night, so forth. And the affiliates are screaming murder. They are starting to scream in public, hey, something's got to give here. The problem is twofold. One, Jay has some clout at NBC. He certainly does not want to go back to late night because he's going to feel like, you know, I was foolish to leave late night in the first place. Why go back? Secondly, NBC has a problem with the Hollywood production community. They now think that 10 p.m. is damaged goods. And they're going to wonder, hey, we got, you know, drama's got taken off at that time period. Do we want to go for the last place network among major broadcasters?
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a lot of egg to scrape off NBC's face if they have to go back and go to more of a conventional 10 o'clock thing after having said that, you know, 10 o'clock as we knew it was dead and buried. You characterize this as one of the biggest stories of the year in TV. What would be some of the other ones to make your short list?
A few. One would be the explosion of cable programming. That this fall we saw a lot of ratings records shatter, everything from Monday Night Football and ESPN getting the two biggest games it's ever had, and also maybe the two highest rated broadcasts, single broadcasts in the history of cable television. TNT continuing to do original shows like Men of a Certain Age, premiered on Monday night, got 5.4 million viewers, critically acclaimed, maybe up for Emmy Awards next year. Ray Romano could very well, along with co-stars Scott Bakula and Andre Braugher, could all be up for Emmy nominations next year. So could the show for Best Drama. And you have Monk, for example, the final episode getting 9.4 million viewers. iCarly, hour-long episode on Saturday night getting 8.8. I mean, the numbers for original cable programming, whether big numbers for things on TNT or Nickelodeon to even numbers on networks like Food and Home and Garden Television are just growing. Cable programming is having an excellent fall. Broadcast, led by the Jay Leno Show, is having a mixed season at best. CBS may be the only broadcast network with something to smile about. Leslie Moonves, the president of CBS, was here in New York yesterday for a media conference held by UBS with about 2,000 people present, and he couldn't help being giddy about the fact that he's got perhaps the two big success stories of shows this fall, NCIS Los Angeles and The Good Wife.
Well, it's interesting, too, because to draw upon further what you just said there, you mentioned the finale of Monk. I've seen that some of this coverage of the end of Monk, people kind of crediting it with the cable TV resurgence of original programming this decade. I think you could probably also credit that to cable stations maybe having a little bit of HBO envy with their original programming over the years. What I would say is this, from listening to one of your podcasts when you were interviewing the co-creators of The League, and I love that show. To me, the best hour of TV every week is Sunny and then The League following it. But I will say the thing that kind of strikes me, basic cable ain't what basic cable used to be. I don't think 5-10 years ago you could have gotten away with some of the stuff they do on there, whether it just be language-wise, innuendo, whatever. It seems as though in the quest to put on this great cutting-edge broadcasting, it does seem as though the boundaries are getting stretched further and further.
And you mentioned The League on FX, Shaq and John Schaefer, the people you were mentioning, the co-creators of that show on my program. But you also have a show like Sons of Anarchy, which this fall really exploded. It did very well its first year, but in its second year this fall, the finale was watched by nearly 5 million viewers. Again, another show which could get some Emmy nominations next year. Katie Sagal, I think, is a lock for a Best Supporting Actress nomination or Best Actress nomination. But you're right, FX, ABC Family, which shows like Lincoln Heights and Make It or Break It, the show about gymnastics this summer, Hallmark Channel with its movies, Cartoon Network, which is getting into the scripted programming game, got into the reality game this year, and on and on and on. So I would say, you know, going back to the list, the explosion of original cable programming making it, I would say the mixed picture with broadcast and Jay Leno. I would also give on my top five list, the interactive television movement. I think there is no question that this may be, big word may, finally, at long last, the coming of interactive TV. You've got TV set makers like Samsung and Vizio coming out with capable sets so you can watch things like Facebook and Twitter and eBay and interactive TV applications original for those sets on the TV set. Fios TV and Uverse have interactive applications. Cable operators like Cablevision Systems here in New York are now introducing interactive advertising and other applications. This is the big push that I think we've been waiting for, and we may look back on this year, a decade from now, because don't forget, we're almost ready to finish the first decade of the 21st century and the new millennium, that this may be the year that interactive television finally happens and maybe finally clicks with the American public. So I would put that as a conditional part of the top five, because I think we are going to know next year or two whether interactive television makes it with the public.
Hey, Simon, you mentioned Cartoon Network, and my brother actually turned me on to Adult Swim. And they've been making some interesting moves, because they just purchased the rights to the original Office. They got shows like The Mighty Boosh and things like that. I every night I end up finding myself watching Adult Swim. It's really great.
It is. It's had an interesting year. It has not been on a lot of critical radar screens, and maybe with the public it has, but not with a lot of the people who follow television. Cartoon Network has, because of shows like Chowder, because of their move to reality television. I was asking Jeff Bukes of Time Warner yesterday, the head of Time Warner, maybe is it time for Cartoon Network to change its name, because it's not just cartoons anymore. It's live-action reality shows, it's animation, both on Cartoon and on Adult Swim late night. And next year it will get into the original scripted drama game with two weekly series. Wow. And he's not ready to make that move yet, but maybe he might be forced to, depending on the kind of mix that Cartoon Network has from here on out. But it certainly is a network worth watching. And, of course, it's trying to compete against Nickelodeon and Disney Channel and Disney XD, which is also cartoons in live action, for that matter. So the children's tween programming landscape is certainly pretty hectic right now and pretty, not uncertain, but pretty fluid.
See, that's interesting, because I didn't know a lot about the direction that Cartoon Network was going in. And not to suck up to you too obnoxiously, Simon, but, you know, your webcast, your columns, you've always got stuff in there that people really didn't know about unless they were following it as closely as you do. One of the things I want to ask you about is a column here where we heard so much in this country when the United States failed to get the 2016 Olympics, and yet I didn't see anywhere aside from your column this notion about how it could have, at least in some ways, had something to do with something as basic as cable television rights deals and the International Olympic Committee not liking the idea of an Olympic cable channel.
Right. Well, to sort of set the story straight from square one, this summer Comcast and the U.S. Olympic Committee announced in Utah at a convention of broadcast media types and so forth, that they were going to launch a new network devoted to coverage of the U.S. Olympic team, about the whole Olympic movement in the United States, and they were going to get it off the ground after February, when NBC has the coverage of the 2010 Winter Olympic Games from Vancouver. It was also going to take the Olympic trial coverage that NBC had been running for years as part of their road to the various games, Salt Lake City, Turin, Beijing, et cetera, et cetera. And when that news broke, the International Olympic Committee went ballistic. Now, you would think that the IOC would love this. Hey, anything that helps the Olympic movement, whether in this country or globally, would be a great thing. But the IOC went ballistic. They've had issues with the U.S. Olympic Committee, and this sort of put them over the top. They were like saying to the USOC, how dare you do this? You know, you're undercutting us. You didn't get our blessing. And there's a little mixed feeling about whether that happened or not. You might argue the timing, but it just seems to me crazy that the IOC went ballistic to the point of saying to the USOC, you go ahead with this, and we're going to make sure you don't get the bid to Chicago for 2016. It angered, or it really scared the USOC officials so much, they went to Europe to meet with IOC President Jacques Rogge, and they said to him, okay, we're capitulating, we will put this project on hold, we won't do anything until you give us the blessing to go ahead. And then what happened was the U.S. lost the bid on the first round. which really shocked everybody. But in reading some of the coverage by Alan Abramson, for example, from Universal Sports, which is the NBC partially owned channel that runs U.S. Olympic coverage and coverage of Olympic sports elsewhere around the globe, that that in fact this might have been the tipping point in why Chicago lost the bid. And I think that the irony, by the way, ultimately in all this, is that Universal Sports is going to be one of the properties that, that Comcast will get when they get control of NBC Universal in about a year from now. And I asked Steve Burke of Comcast, you know, what is going on with the deal? How will this deal with the U.S. Olympic Committee you've got change in light of having Universal Sports? Can't say yet, probably still on hold, but I got to think that there's a lot of very sullen heads at the U.S. Olympic Committee and a lot of bad blood with the IOC.
I want to investigate that further with you, Simon, because this is going to be one of the huge stories going forward, all the implications across all the platforms of this Comcast NBC acquisition here. I think it was Dan Shanoff. Somebody wrote a column in the last couple of days here speculating that the godforsaken Versus channel, which nobody gets, at least I don't as a very bitter person, I don't get it, but to be rebranded, and this is speculation, but the NBC Sports channel as a potential full-fledged competitor to ESPN, of which, of course, there really has not been much of anything for the last decade or so, something to really help break that monopolistic chokehold on the 24-hour cable sports coverage here. What I would like to know, I'd like to get your thoughts on that and the potential implications, as well as a question that nobody's been able to answer for me. I keep hearing about, oh, but they couldn't do a SportsCenter show because it would be prohibitively expensive. CNNSI bled money on that. Fox bled money on that. What the heck would be so prohibitively expensive, especially when you've got local affiliates all over the country and you don't have to staff bureaus everywhere? I don't get what, you know, a highlight show or whatever it would be so prohibitively expensive. So I'd like to get your thoughts on that and the overall picture of such a network.
Well, first of all, I think to that argument, I think it's pretty bunk. Remember, CNN for years had a late-night show called Sports Tonight with Fred Hickman and Nick Charles that ran very well, and, of course, it was from CNN. This was even before CNN had the short-lived Sports Illustrated network, but that went well for years, and there was no issue about the cost. So I think that argument is bunk. As for Versus, I think there's no question, and going back to the Comcast situation, there's no question that Comcast wanted NBC for its cable networks, for USA, for Sci-Fi, for Universal Sports, which is basically a half interest in that channel, for Oxygen, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, for Bravo. And the feeling, I believe, among Brian Roberts, head of Comcast, and Steve Burke, and the other Comcast team is, these cable channels will add a lot. But when you have people like Dick Ebersol, the head of NBC Sports and Universal, who could work his magic on Versus and the Golf Channel and the Comcast regional sports nets, or somebody like Bonnie Hammer from USA working on Style and E, Entertainment Television, that's a pretty good deal. Comcast has all along in the last week been saying, no, we're not going to turn Versus into an ESPN competitor, and ESPN has so many networks, we can't do what they do, which is ESPN, ESPN2, News, Classic, Deportes, et cetera, et cetera. And he's right, because ESPN has the infrastructure and they got all those channels. But certainly getting a Dick Ebersol, a brain like that, to contribute his expertise to the Golf Channel to make their coverage, which, by the way, has improved over this past year, or Versus, to make it an even better network. Will it become an ESPN? No. But because to be ESPN, you'd have to do a lot more, and they would have to get a lot more sports rights, which are currently tied up or will be in play soon. But there's no question Comcast wants this for the cable channels, not for NBC.
Do you take seriously the notion, this is another piece of speculation that I've seen, although what you're saying about in the last week, if Versus is downplaying the ESPN comparisons, maybe this wouldn't be the case, but I've seen speculation, and supposedly there's a clause that would allow NBC to do it, to move the Notre Dame games to whether it be Versus or a rebranded NBC Sports Network. Something like that, it would seem to me, would really be one of these things, you know, call your local cable operators if you don't have Versus. You know, it would be a way to really drive eyeballs to it, but controversial in the sense of giving up the national television platform on Saturday afternoons.
Yeah, they could. They could also go elsewhere. They could certainly, you know, let it be something that their broadcast stations could do, not be an NBC deal, or turn into a. It depends, of course, on how Notre Dame does, who they name as their next coach, and how well they do next season and beyond. It was a terrible season for Notre Dame, 6-6, but. But this is among the kind of questions I think that is going to play itself out, particularly as this deal gets regulatory scrutiny. There's no question the Obama administration is going, and the FCC under Julius Jankowski, Federal Communications Commission, is going to use this as a test case to see what kind of law they will lay down about this deal.
Well, I think that, you know, Bill O'Reilly would probably smirk a bit at the notion that Jeffrey Immelt's not going to get his way on a merger like this from the Obama administration, Simon.
And by the way, O'Reilly has not, since this deal was announced almost a week ago, O'Reilly has not commented on, not done a talking points memo. You know, he has slammed Immelt, he slammed MSNBC, nothing yet on this. So I'm curious when he's going to, you know, get something in his talking points memo. By the way, another interesting thing, O'Reilly's ratings on the Factor this fall have been terrific. He is averaging anywhere between 3 and 4 million viewers a night. The Sarah Palin interview only had nearly 5. His ratings have gone up as well as the rest of Fox. I mean, Fox News Channel is a top 5 cable network.
Well, you know what? And MSNBC, when they had George Bush for a punching bag, they never rivaled Fox, but they were ascendant at the time. I mean, it really does show you, does it not? That's the universal lesson of this, is that conflict sells. When the guy from the other party that you're perceived as being from is in office, your network's going to thrive, is it not?
Yeah, but you also want, when you do, and you got, first of all, you got to remember that the shows on MSNBC and Fox News at night are opinion shows, and they clearly able such. O'Reilly certainly does, Hannity does, Keith Olman does with Countdown, Rachel Maddow. But you also want to temper your opinion with some level of fairness. And to give credit to O'Reilly, he does exhibit a great level of fairness on his show. He will invite Democrats as well as Republicans on his program. He will invite people who disagree with him. I think with O'Reilly, it's a case of, you know, you're welcome. If you have a good argument, I will, if not accept it, I'll certainly deal with it. It's when you beat around the bush with O'Reilly, that's when he gets going.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, and that's what makes for some interesting segments when it happens.
And Rachel Maddow's show on MSNBC, I think, is a terrific show because she is very fair. Yes, she has her opinions, but she's very fair. She does her thing in a very wry kind of way, and I think the audience is catching on to that.
Well, and it's not completely unheard of for Republicans to be on there like it is for Olbermann. I'll give her that much.
Mm-hmm. And I like Keith. You know, when Keith is at his best, he's very inquisitive. I think the man is a wonderful writer. I mean, sometimes he goes overboard, you know, with the same topics night after night, with the worst person in the world being O'Reilly or whoever. But when Keith is on his game, there is nobody who writes as passionately, as perceptively as he does in primetime.
The passionate is one descriptive I've heard used for him. But Simon, as we said, you have your excellent media blog that is there at jackmyers.com. Of course, the show blogtalkradio.com, where people can listen every week, and podcast.
We're on. By the way, we're on now twice a week on some weeks. We're on Mondays at 3 o'clock every week, and we are now on twice a week on Friday. We're now twice on Fridays. Fridays twice a month, I should say. And we're in fact on this Friday at 3, and we're on 3 o'clock Eastern, noon on the West Coast.
Okay, and they can catch up with you on the podcast at sonnybyte.com, SONIBYTE.com. Put it out
right
there, Simon.
Right, and we are available through Sonnybyte. Sonnybyte places our show on 14 different web download sites like TrueMix.com, GetAPodcast.com, so people can go to those sites, download the show. You can now download the program, by the way, Rick, to any major mobile device. That includes the new Motorola Droids, all the Blackberries, every make and model of major phone, and that's really great. We're getting now about 10,000 downloads a month, and it looks like we're going to break that in December.
How fitting. You're covering technology right there, and the show just kind of epitomizes it in that way. Of course, as we've been saying, people can check out the discussion that we've got with you in our Dissecting the Decades ebook that's coming out here. But any last things that we didn't put out there that we should, projects you got going on, things you want to promote?
Well, on Tomorrow We Televise, by the way, speaking of this time of year, we're going to be on Friday, and we're going to have a very interesting man by the name of Kurt Schleier. He's the reviewer who does his own website called TV Sound Off, and we're going to do a fun thing with him and our audience. We're inviting our audience to call in with their thoughts about the best and worst television shows of 2009, and we'll see what their choices do in matching up against Kurt, who I know will have some pretty definitive opinions about best and worst. And then next week we've got two episodes, and both of them will deal with interactive television. About a year ago we covered the Widget Channel project with Yahoo and Intel. We will have a rep from Yahoo on Monday, and then next Friday we will have a rep from Intel's Digital Home project. And then the following week, on December 21st, we got a really good show. Shane Sparks, the Emmy Award-nominated choreographer for So You Think You Can Dance and a judge on America's Best Dance Crew on MTV will be our first guest. And then Jody Flynn, who is the executive producer of what may be one of the sleeper shows of this fall, Hoarders, on A&E, will be joining us. So I'm looking forward to that that holiday week, you might say our little holiday week special or holiday week present to our audience. But in terms of television stuff, I think it's been an amazing year. Digital transition also happened. We've had the first president of color. A big surprise, I think, to me was we have not heard President Obama talk about diversity in television or diversity in the media. And I got to think at some point, and hopefully this coming year, that he will speak out on the subject, or he will certainly look at new television ventures with an eye toward expanding diversity. It'll be very interesting to see what kind of action he takes, whether he lets Julie Shenikowski and the FCC take their course, or whether he decides to prod things, as he did with delaying the digital transition from early February to June, so that most of the public could be equipped with the capacity for that transition. And I also think that next year we're going to see an explosion of cable programming on every level like you've never seen, including networks being remolded or made over. Fine Living becomes the cooking channel. American Life TV picks up Family Net, as they did this week, and will boost their subscription. The road to the Oprah Winfrey Network. Discovery doing turning Discovery Kids into a joint venture with Hasbro, which could have some very interesting programming choices there. It's going to be on a lot of levels a very exciting first year of the next decade.
It is going to be very interesting. Of course, your platforms, Simon, are some of the best places to check this out. Always a pleasure to have you on. I'm already looking forward to the next time we do it, Simon.
Same here, Rick. All the very best. Happy holidays to you and your crew.
Thank you. Same to you. Happy holidays, Simon. Simon Applebaum, everyone, from Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Good friend of the show. We look forward to having him back on in the near future here.